This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 37 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. In today's episode, we have Daphne on dealing with assigned sexuality. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thank you, Max. Here we are with another round of the Kinky Cast. Sitting across the table is the Beast. What do you know?
Woody, I know I'm lucky to be alive today. Traffic was crazy.
You know, playing bumper cars on the freeway might be fun for some people, but leave me out of that round.
I was definitely playing, and I saw a few people that didn't win. They definitely had the loss. But we got our guest here tonight, and she arrived safe and sound.
By way of an Irish pub, yes.
By the way of an Irish pub, we have the vivacious, the brilliant, the talented, the scrumptious Daphne with us.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, for having me on your auspicious show, because this is quite an honor.
Well, we are honored to have you here. Daphne.
Yes, sir.
You weren't always Daphne.
No.
You said you were born a poor black boy in Louisiana.
Yes, I was born typical middle American suburbia. Dad worked in an oil factory. He was an electrician. He came home. We did all the typical middle American stuff, sports and vacations and take care of the family farm. And then off I went to the military.
Off you went to the military.
Yes.
And you're a you are a late baby boomer.
Yes, I am a very late baby boomer. A tweener, I call myself.
Oh, well, I'm a tweener also. We share a similar year. So you went off to the military, and this was in the height of the Cold War.
Correct.
You traveled around the world.
Yes. Quite extensively. Which is one of the blessings of being in the military, if there is one, is being able to travel to many lands.
Now you are a young white man in the military.
Yes.
After being born a poor black boy in Louisiana.
Boy, you got me lost to that one. I love it. Okay.
So now I don't see the trace of the mail. Tell us about the story. How does this...
Okay, life is always complex, and I grew up in a very different type environment. I grew up with cross cultures across many lands in different environments. My father was Mississippian Protestant. My mother was semi-urban Baton Rouge Catholic, and I grew up in a town that was divided 50-50 Catholic Protestant almost, and every culture was at war with each other.
So private school or public school?
Oh, I was definitely public school.
Okay.
You don't get this educated in private school.
Is that called street smarts?
It's called street smarts. And so there was always this dichotomy about right and wrong, who's right, who's wrong, and who's all that. But all along life, when I look back, when I finally discovered myself late in life, there was markers along the whole path that I couldn't put together until I actually had a chance to put it together around, 33 years old or so. I can't remember exactly the year I finally woke up and said, there's something really different about me that is almost normal.
Almost normal.
Almost normal, yes.
Now, I am looking at your bio.
Yes.
It's labeled Kink History, which is much more interesting.
Yeah, my Kink History is definitely pretty fun.
So I am looking at dates, and I'm translating my college experience. You grew up not really understanding that you were gay or
trans
or anything.
No, I had no clue.
This was a confusing time, I can well imagine.
It was, I don't know. Part of it was the fact that I knew something was different, but I didn't know where it was different at. I had no clue because, remember, my background, just briefly, is very straight, male-dominated culture, classic, as you
middle,
would see.
Middle America.
I mean, football, baseball, apple pie, and gumbo was it. There was no mixing of things, even though I grew up in this gumbo of cultures. And so all along my life, I had weird things that I would do. Like, I had this obsession with making underwear, female underwear, not male underwear, when I was growing up. Never knew what that meant. Had this obsession of learning different things when I was, that was not typically male. Yes, I played football, wrestled, baseball, softball, you name it. I did all the great stuff and even went to war. But there was always something different. There was always that drawn to, there's something over there that I want or need that I never could put together because it was not a part of what I have in my head or what I was programmed. I had no programming to lay the model on top of to understand it.
And no community to really reach out to because you didn't know what to reach for.
Didn't know there was a community.
Yeah, and this was in the era just post HIV discovery.
Correct.
When America was undergoing a great sexual re-oppression again.
Correct.
And I see that you wandered into a bookstore, adult bookstore, I might
add. Of course.
Add, in the Big Easy.
Sin City.
Looking for answers or guidance or
looking
curiosity?
For porn.
Looking for porn.
Looking for porn.
And she has a twinkle in her eye when she says this.
I'm just being honest. You know, what else do you go to an adult bookstore for except for looking for adult books? And so the story is pretty curious for me. I've told it several times to people. I walk into the store, and first thing next to your head to the right was the BDSM magazines.
Perfect.
Yeah, it was like something hits you in the side of the head, the proverbial cosmic 2x4. And it was like, that couldn't be right. So I walked on through the store. And you typically do your Hustler and your Playboy and all this other stuff. You look around and it's like, go back and look, but don't let the people notice you lingering over it too long. And you go back and you play around the store a little bit and come back and look. And finally, you take that deep plunge. You reach up there and you see the picture that appeals to you the most, not knowing that behind it is nothing but a bunch of advertisements. But you grab the three magazines, you go up to the front, you quickly pay for it, you stuff it in your brown paper bag, and you walk out the door. Big relief.
Okay, now let me stop you right there.
Yes.
When you open these magazines, what did you find? What type of BDSM was it?
Most of it was just basically bondage type things. There were some things that looked like spanking. Some things looked like femdom was mostly predominant in there. There was hardly, in fact, I did not see any male dominant type stuff in the magazines itself. It was all female doing female or female doing male. But most of the magazines had advertisements for people all around the United States.
Personals.
Personals, correct.
And well do I remember those. Those are my first exposure to mm-hmm. this world before the internet.
Before
changed
the internet.
Everything. So you found this wealth of people with similar leanings.
Correct.
And did you reach out to any?
Of course.
And?
Well, okay, you start out with first getting the guts up, being a shy person. I am introvert. Believe it or not, most people don't take it.
Oh, hold on. Okay. Really? Yeah. I've known you for a while. Okay.
It's something I've overcome. You know, part of life is learning to overcome your weaknesses.
You are a success story in that area.
Somebody told me recently the highest compliment I received in a long time was, you are a character. You don't have to keep working at it. So I thought that was a character. But anyway, getting back to story. I started writing, and I tried to find people that I thought would connect with somehow. So I wrote, and I ended up connecting to a pro dom who travels through the area, and she said, sure, I will meet you. We wrote the price out and whatever and agreed to meet at a certain time. All this was done, not even by telephone, all by handwriting, and you agreed to meet and all that. So that was my first encounter, and geez, what a relief it was.
Oh.
What a relief it was to go in and actually have something done that has been in your mind since you were a child, of something there.
Yeah, and I remember you saying that you didn't date much in high school or college up to this point.
I was a complete, total washout in the dating scene. I maybe had two dates in high school, both around the time of the proms, that maybe lasted 3 months each at the most. College, I dated once for about 3 months, and that's it. That was my total experience level.
So you go into this with little dating experience into these encounters.
Correct. Very little interpersonal skills.
Oh, and you say it goes smashingly.
It went as best as I thought I could. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven, actually, if that's such a place.
Okay. Now, what became of this first encounter? Did it go on? Or?
Yes, I ended up seeing the person about four more times, but I kept trying to look that there was more. Because every time I would encounter somebody, there was always the hint there was more. But again, I was balancing very little money, college, working, being in the Louisiana National Guard, commissioned officer already, and trying to juggle many different things at one time. And also try to fight for my active duty commission. So there wasn't a whole lot of spare money. And when I could save it up, it was like waiting for that woman to come through town.
So tell us about the encounter.
Okay, the encounter basically started, it was a hotel room. So there wasn't quite much to setting up. There was spanking, as usual. The little body worship started out with the feet, work up to about the top of the boots, and then you ended up being tied for a little bit. Then there was some CBT done, and then the spanking, and then there was the masturbation to completion, and the scene was over. It was a pretty formulaic pro scene, and most of them were. And, you know, once you get your foot in the door, you taste that first taste, you can't go back. You cannot go back.
It is a drug, isn't it?
It was addictive as anything I've ever touched in my life.
So would you identify as a submissive then?
For most of my life, I am a submissive. I don't know what I am now. I'm an evolving creature at this time. I can top with some of the best. I can dominate. I just don't have a dominating personality type thing. I think a part of that has always been coming from the fact that I'm not secure positioned socially enough to be able to exert dominance and have somebody else in my life. I think a dominant, in my opinion, has to have some form of control over their own life and ability to be secure in their own life to be able to project that air of dominance in their play life. I believe in congruency of a person. Somebody has to be completely whole in their aspect in order to be able to be that person.
Sounds reasonable.
Yes. But now, back to the titillating tidbits.
All right.
So you saw the mistress when possible for a year or so.
About a year or so, yeah.
But then you reached out to a new mistress.
Well,
and this opened a new gate for you, didn't it?
Oh, yes. Okay. Again, you're coming from an aspect. I just finished 2 years of college. I was a commissioned officer. Life was going grand. You know, I thought I was on top of the world. And so I reach out again to somebody after this one decided she wasn't going to come back through town anymore. And I wrote. And this is where I found further hints. There was life beyond the pro session.
Mm-hmm.
And this one led me to a interesting road that I had no clue about, but for some reason I totally accepted and walked down the road. And that led to the first experience as being a different gender than myself.
This was your first cross-dressing experience?
In a sense, yes, other than the typical, I guess, minor stages of having the desire and sneaking lingerie now and then to put it on.
Uh-huh.
This was the first, like, real immersion into actually doing this. And I had no clue what I was doing. I had no clue what was being asked of me. It was meet this stranger at this motel 40 miles away from my house and do what the man says.
So you drove there. In dress?
No, I drove there in male clothes, and the only thing I had with me was lavender hose with a lavender one-piece unitard type thing that was very frilly. I still remember it. I kept it for years as a souvenir up until the Gulf War, and you had to ditch things in case somebody found you. But anyway, that's getting ahead of self. But I drove there and had to stop and buy some kind of weird makeup to that I had no clue what I was doing, and end up having a really decent time with this gentleman.
Now, was this your first male?
First male encounter as well.
Oh, wow. This was, and listeners, we got to remember, this was an experience of about 3 years here since since walking into the first adult bookstore.
Right.
To here was only 3 years.
Yes.
So you jumped in with both feet.
And this was also back in 1986, pre-internet and a lot of things.
Correct. There was a lot of weirdness to this that I look back on now thinking this was just, I guess, totally normal for that time and era.
But now we would be red flags up everywhere today.
When I give classes on red flags, I always say, trust me, I've committed every one of these violations. It's just luck that I'm here without anything negative has really seriously happened to me along the way. But I didn't ever see the woman. I never got to meet her. And all this time, we corresponded for over a year. And my only encounter was me going through this test of being with this gentleman. And we did both sides, top and bottom, I guess sexually you could say. And it was okay. And the guy said, well, you did great considering you don't know what you were doing. And he says, you know, I said, well, what kind of report you're going to give me? Of course, I'm always interested in my grades.
always an academic.
Always an academic. And so I was you know, he says, well, I'm going to go report favorably. But things drug out. And by that time, I was hopping a plane to Virginia to interactive duty and going on about my life.
And that's what I was just coming to. You had this big interruption. You had this great 3 years.
Yes.
And then Uncle Sam comes calling.
Well, my goal was fulfilled. I got to go on active duty as a military officer, which has always been the goal. And so went to Virginia, went through my officer basic, you know, went through the classes. And there I wasn't really interested. I was concentrating on career. I'm kind of a focused type person. It takes a little bit for me to spread out. I have to be secure in one area to move out. And I knew I was going to be there temporary. I didn't want to get anything started. Plus, it was kind of difficult. You were so immersed with everybody around mm-hmm. you that you don't have a lot of time to go out and do things like find partners.
And sneak away from the group, right?
Freedom, as it were.
Yeah.
Freedom, as it were. So it wasn't until I got re-stationed at a permanent duty station, which was Fort Polk, Louisiana. And then, you know, you always go back to the criminal returns to the same mode.
To the scene of the crime.
Go find a magazine and start writing.
So you were right back home again, only in a different career here.
Correct.
Okay.
But 100 miles difference from where
miles,
I grew up.
Yeah.
Roughly.
Close. So you were back to meeting a mistress. But something, Uncle Sam deterred that again, didn't he?
Well, yes, just when I started getting really good with, but of course, you know, the world changed in that instant, but I was getting close to this mistress in New Orleans, and that's when I really knew there was life beyond the pro-dom scene, because they kept hinting, wouldn't you be great at a party? Wouldn't this person be great at a person? Wouldn't this, and there was always the hint, there was something on the other side, and I was wanting to get there, but I ended up in Honduras, I ended up in California, and I ended up straight into the Gulf War. And then ended up married after that.
Okay, the marriage. Was that a...
that was a side tour.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that motivated by what you believed was the right thing to do? I know that was my first marriage. I thought it should be what I should be doing.
There's many things, and again, I'm a very analytical person. I do have an advanced degree in dissecting myself. So, they say the higher you go in psychology, the more messed up you are. So, one of the jokes inside the circle, and I started looking back. I got married. One, the person really said they were in love with me, and I was enthralled with that because I never had someone say that to me, so to speak. So I got bit by that bug, and also the social convention of, well, you know, you're getting up in rank, you need to start looking at having marriage so people don't think you're weird, which I still was weird and still had all my weird stuff with me. But
we like your weird.
So do you calling that denial?
It was, of course, you could call it denial. You could call it trying to fit in with social convention and trying to do what you thought was right versus what was in your heart. And that's been one of those things that plagued my life, is following my heart versus following my head. And I always had choices. Like even before I got out of college, I had this real great offer from a gas pipeline company from Louisiana State University to go in. And they would pay for me all the way to a doctorate. All I had to do was sign up and forgo the Army. But I went the Army direction. Do I regret that? No. Do I know what I missed? I don't know. You know, maybe I'd be rich, famous, who knows. But I know I enjoyed what I had. I came to grips with my term with what I chose.
So this is your military service, and you're in Germany.
Yes.
And this was another moment.
Yes. Again, by then I was company commander. I was, you know, running around with security clearances, and I had so much responsibility as company commander. That's when a lot of things were going on in Europe at the time, and lots of very stressful things, including a stressful marriage where the Frau or the wife was wanting to exit and all this stuff. And it's like, well, heck, you know, we just got married and you knew I was in the military. What the heck you think came with that?
Military wives.
Right. So anyway, that split. She took off and went to the States for whatever, a period of rest.
But the moment I'm trying to get to
is when freedom comes, the cat will go play.
All right. So the cat's playing.
Yes, the cat went looking
and,
again.
and at this point, you're a very male military officer.
Partially.
But inside.
Right. Outside, I was the epitome of what you looked for. I was the patent blood and guts. I was the drive hard, even, you know, looking at people and taking the job very seriously. I was a very serious person when it came to my job in the military. But when the uniform came off, I went back to being who I was. And that's what was always the dichotomy. I felt relief when I went and did things. So,
and you visited what kind of club in Germany?
Yeah, it was kind of, I guess, a all-about kink club because they were having the vampire ball. And besides lots of good flowing alcohol and beer, you had lots of people in very nice attire for fetish wear.
And did you see any play?
I saw some play in terms of protocol-type play going on. I didn't see any what you would call serious S&M play. It was more of people on leashes, people being obedient, you know, the body worship, kind of mild stuff that
the posing.
The posing,
yeah.
In Europe, they call it S&M, stand and model.
Okay.
Knew what I mean? But this was still added to your entire experience.
This was another different experience because it kept reinforcing there was something beyond a pro-dom scene. There was something beyond the pro-dom scene. And that's what I never could find. I never could figure out how to reach that golden circle. Where are these people that do this outside of a paid session?
But you were on the road to finding this.
Yes. I was getting closer.
Because I remember you saying that you started connecting with Pep.
Oh, that's when I got back to the States.
When you got back to the States, and listeners, we'll be talking to Nancy Ava Miller in just a couple more weeks, mm-hmm. Who founded PEP.
Right.
But PEP is very much about the real experience.
It was about the real experience, and it was kind of refreshing. And again, trying to go back to, you know, get back to the States, get established, job going well, and then Marriage problems set in, wife took off, cat wants to play. Atlanta's full of adult bookstores. So out I went looking. So the only method I knew how was go find a bookstore. I didn't know that there was magazines on the side of the street that advertised all this stuff that were free.
Yes, the back page at that point was full of this stuff.
And Atlanta had the, I forgot the magazine's name, that was printed free and distributed on the street that had all the stuff in it. I had no clue. Again, very sheltered, very strict, you know, military life. You're living, you don't see this stuff. And I couldn't read German that well to read the free magazines. I could just look at the pictures, and they were really hot. But anyway, so I got back and I found a magazine. I searched for anything that said Atlanta. And so I went through and saw a person by the name of Mistress Alexis. And I sat and took a deep breath and wrote probably about a 3 or 4 page introduction letter saying, this is what I'm looking for, and I know there's something beyond a procession, but if I have to take the procession to get to there, that's what I'm willing to do.
The procession that was the bread and butter of this community in the mid-90s in Middle America.
The Het community, basically, from what I could gather, the pro-doms were basically the gatekeepers.
They were the gatekeepers at that era. And you met another PEP counselor.
Yes.
Who is near and dear to both of our hearts.
Well, that came a little bit later. But getting past, Alexis was the one that turned me to PEP. And she said, I appreciate you. This is the most compassionate letter I've seen. Here's what you're really looking for. It's not me. Although I will see you around. And sure enough, she would come to the clubs every now and then. We would talk, and she'd laugh like, you're the person that wrote me that wonderful letter by hand. Because that's all we had back then.
Yeah.
So,
well, either that or a typewriter.
Right. No, I didn't have a typewriter. Okay. I was just getting into computers, so I knew a lot about computers. But it was just trying to get things done. So I went to PEP. PEP was a wonderful experience, and I had a lot of things. Lady D was running PEP in Atlanta, and that's where I ran into the person you were alluding to, Mistress K, or as she's known now as Grandmistress K.
Grandmistress K.
Scared the living daylights out of me, this woman, because she was loud and boisterous. Lady D was, too, but Lady D wasn't trying to set her claws in me that much. She was.
Mistress K doing that?
Yes. She was, y'all see the tame side of her these days. Back in those days. Well, you know her from back then. She was wild and loud.
I met her in 94.
Yes, she was wild and loud back then.
Yes, she was. So this was a huge awakening in your life.
It was the start of changing to be who I am. And that was, it came about kind of interesting. We were, by then became master slave or mistress slave, and we were kind of semi-cohabitating, even though I was still married at the time. And because wife was gone, wasn't coming back. And I kind of realized that, even though I hung on for, I guess, good old chivalry's sake, that last depth of chivalry left in you. But anyway, I got to the point, and she lived over at the house for a little while, the house I had. And at first she had the other bedroom, and I had the master suite because it was my house and my furniture, and she would, as a guest. And she said she needed a place. So by then, you know, there was a lot of troubling signs in my life with bankruptcy and all this other stuff going on because of the wife. And I found the depth of how much I've been fooled. But anyway, Mistress K was at the house, and she noticed there was the bedroom she stayed in had a closet full of clothes. And she came out and said, well, who's those clothes one day that's in this bedroom? I said, well, they're the ex-wives. She goes, they happen to be your size.
You can't pull nothing over on her.
Well, that was the thing. And I was always scared of her about being dressed because most of the things I've seen her do with people who were dressed in different gender roles were very humiliating to me. Loud, boisterous, teasing, taunting. And It's like, not where you're. That's not where I'm at. That's the reason why I never was Greek, because I was already a commissioned officer, because I'm not going to go be somebody's punk. I'm already a commissioned officer. What do I need to prove to you that I can drink and be a buddy to you?
Right.
So that was the type of thing, the mindset of, I am not going to go through that. That is not what I want. So she hem-hawed and played around and started kind of doing all these neat things and saying, well, let's try it. Let me bring my stuff and let's try it. Meaning full makeup, whole nine yards, wig and everything. And I was like, holy cow. Well, okay, try it. Let's do it. So she slapped on this blonde wig. It was real nice. Trust me, she had high quality stuff.
Yeah, but I'm just visualizing the blonde.
Yeah, you go there.
We have a very nice auburn shade going on now that suits you.
Yes, and that was from my master for years. He wanted me auburn hair, and I appeased him. But that was after the military for sure, okay? Definitely wouldn't go walking in with red hair in the military. But anyway, she dressed me up. First time I saw myself in the mirror was at my house. She was standing beside me, and I cried. I went totally nuts about the person I saw in that mirror. I was expecting something different, and it wasn't there. And so it hurt my feelings that I didn't look the way I thought I was going to look. And so it was like, nope, this is not going there. I'm not doing this. This is not me. This proves it. This proves it. I'm not that. I still didn't know what that was fully at that time. I wasn't that. So I denied it again for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
And then came the second try with a hair color that matched my hair, a little bit of conservative style.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't look like something.
It wasn't the bimbo look this time.
It wasn't the weird bimbo look, or excuse me, I don't mean to say that. It's just not wanting the look I was looking for. When I saw the person in there, it was like, that looks like me. That is me. And so that kind of awoken that, wait a minute now, there's something else here. Why did you, and then you start going back in your mind, why does this feel okay? Why does this feel comfortable? Why does this feel good? Why did that encounter with that man didn't appall you? I mean, on the outside, I was the killer commie for mommy, Nazi Rotsy, short-haired, you know, almost card-carrying KKK member, it seems like.
Well, you were from the South.
I was from the South, and trust me, David Duke did burn crosses not far from my house.
And you were an officer.
And I was an officer. And I was from a very strict religious family. So it was kind of all these dichotomies that never, ever settled in. But when I saw that person that was close to who I was, but a totally different person, it was like looking in a magic mirror. And it was like, that is who I am. But what is that? There was nothing there. Again, there was no framework to lay that concept on.
And listeners, we're in the mid-90s.
Mid-90s still.
And the whole trans culture was very...
still getting off its feet.
Yeah, it was... The image was still the drag queens and
the
very flamboyant and the sissies.
The sissies in the BDSM lifestyle, it was all about sissy.
Yeah.
And... again, it was like when I saw myself complete. So it took a long time being that person. And then I finally took a step, and I said, okay, let me try. By then, computer connections had started becoming better.
AOL and CompuServe.
CompuServe was my gateway.
Yep.
And I made a persona, and it took me a while to come up with a name, and I tried several few, and I came up with mine, and unfortunately I chose a name that was very unique, and I didn't quite know the full history behind it, and so I thought I might have in accident cursed myself in the long run for choosing my name.
All right, what does Daphne mean?
Daphne, Greek.
Greek?
Daphne was the goddess, or the daughter of a goddess who Apollo tried to seduce and woo. And she ran into the woods screaming, "Keep this man away from me." And her daddy turned her into a laurel tree. And that's why Olympians wear laurels around their head when they're crowned.
Oh, okay.
So never to have love never ever again in her life.
Boy, I hope that isn't an irony there.
I hope that wasn't. Again, that's one of the things, like when you choose your name, you got to be careful. So the middle name is somewhat different. That was purposely chosen for the opposite effect. But anyway, we'll get to Amber in a second. But yes, so I started looking, and people kept saying, go to SEC, go to Southern Comfort Conference, go to SEC, you will find yourself. Go there, go there, go there, young lady. So young lady went there. And when you walk into a room and there's 825 others just like you.
Just like you. The Southern Comfort, but the Southern Comfort Conference wasn't about the drag queens and the sissies. These are about real people.
They were welcomed.
Yeah.
But it was about finding yourself as a transgendered person, regardless of whether you were full-time, part-time, or whatever you went. It was about finding yourself. And when you walk in the room and find out that you're not a freak, you're not a blight of nature, that this is normalized to across the society, you're like, geez. And so I went 3 years, 4 years in a row to the SEC. Gradually, I was, you know, on the conference committee. Of course, I'm never a person that stays down. I always seek responsibility somehow. So I was up doing conference, helping with things. But I always kept learning, learning, and learning. And I found who I was and what I was and almost why I was. There's still a lot of research out there to be done on why people become transgendered over their lives. It's not fully defined by science.
There is a lot of debate on what's the nature of gender,
right?
And how connected is it is the feeling of gender with the mechanics of gender?
And it's very difficult. And it's I can't explain to you I can take my experience and explain who I am as a person, but how I got here is anybody's guess. And I cannot generalize my life against anybody else's and say, this is what transgendered people are, this is what transsexuals are, this is what people who are, because we're all different. We all move through society in different paths with different ways of motivating and thinking.
And you were undergoing a lot of changes at this point.
Oh, yes.
Because I understand your employer and you were having an increasingly conflicted relationship.
Yes, I finally exited the military in April of 99.
And this must have been a hard thing to do and an easy thing.
It was both. You're absolutely right on that account because part of me, this was what I wanted since I was 4 years old. That was the epitome of my life, was being a military officer. Now I find out that the reason why I like women's clothes, and I find out that I'm not quite like everybody else. But you kind of look at it and go, okay, I have to make a choice. Do I continue and press and have this nagging over my head? I mean, again, I had clearances. I was read on to many different things. I was working at, you know, Army operational level. Mm-hmm. So I had to make a lot of choices. And there wasn't many choices left to me. I had a few dings in my career. Those were kind of fun and interesting, a whole nother sidelight. But I'm not always perfect.
But this was an era that was much more repressed. Let's see, in the 90s... We were beyond the Reagan eras.
Correct.
But
The Gulf War.
But we still, Jack McGee had not made his big statement at this point.
Correct.
And for our listeners, Jack McGee was a UN weapons inspector that went public with his kink, went totally out and kept his job and career, and this was a first.
This was the first, correct.
And he's still considered a trailblazer
yes.
in that area, the late Jack McGee.
You had that on one side, and you had Ashcroft on the other.
Correct.
Yes.
And so that was shutting yeah. a lot of things
and
down.
We're not even going to drag up the poor old dead J. Edgar.
No.
We'll let him rest in peace.
Yeah.
So there was this era of change, and it was very cathartic because I gave up my future, my career, to pursue what I wanted. And so I went, got a job. I was an environmental geologist at a very successful small company, traveled the U.S., trailblazing again, you know, mm-hmm. looking for environmental problems. A lot of people said, hey, you're a darn good counselor. You're really darn, you don't know what kind of skills you have. So I got talked into going and getting a master's in psychology, thinking this would be great because I can then probably work till I die and not have to worry about finding a job again. So there was a lot of career decisions back then. Was trying to look at where's my long-term career in a field that I could be me. And I found out once you cross the line and you tried to straddle the line, you're still not welcome, even in psychology. And so it was.
So even a field that is about learning, people learning who they are and how to be happy with themselves, you didn't find them very welcome to a
trans individual.
Because by this point, you were becoming much more feminine.
Yes.
When did you make the transition to living as a woman?
I probably about 10 years ago, after I got fired, after I moved to Tennessee in 2004, I worked for about 3 years. Around 2008 to 2009, I got fired for being outed as a transsexual at work. And it was shortly after that, I sat down and looked at myself and says, I've got to do something. I can't continue like this. And I went about 6 years unemployed, trying to find work, presenting as two different halves, and it didn't work. I finally said, I'm either going to have to. I had a moment of catharsis, and it was pretty bad. I went out into a yard, which we had, and sat in the trees and woods, and I had a breakdown. I said, hey, divinity, gods, goddesses, whatever are out there, I'm done with this life. Take me now. If you don't take me, then I know I have to go forward. And so that was kind of like my second, quote, attempt at suicide. One was while I was in the military, I did do something that purposely ruined my career, the reason why I couldn't go on. So that was kind of a professional suicide. So this was actually not an attempt, but just basically going out and say, okay, I'm here, I'm done, I'm tired, I don't know where to go. Tell me. Well, since the crickets answered me, it was like, okay, that's my answer.
So you marshal on.
So I marshaled on. I went back to things, and I started looking at name change, and got my name changed, got things going, had a friend who decided to take a risk with me and asked me to come interview, and for the past 2 years, 2.5 years, I've had a wonderful job as myself, but that took me being the courage to break with my former self and move into myself.
So from about 99 to 2012,
mm-hmm.
while your early years, you jumped in with both feet, this transition took much longer.
It took a lot longer because there was so much more at risk. This was my family. I didn't know how they were going to react. My coming out to them, God, it was hilarious. It was Facebook. Bless Facebook. It saved me the trouble.
Is it Hollywood screen material?
It's not Hollywood screen material because it was over and done within a day.
Ah.
You know, you friend your brother on Facebook, and all of a sudden, every high school person and every family member knows that you're a transsexual. And you go, and lucky I was down with my master and no cell phone and having a great time. And I got on the road Sunday coming home and turned on my cell phone, and there was 18 messages of people cursing me out, telling me they love me, cursing me out again, telling me they love me. And so it was all over with. But they went through their grieving process before I even got on the phone. So Bless me that I was out.
So it were some blessings.
Yes. I didn't have to go through it firsthand. They did it on their own without my help.
Well, that's like auto-outing. That's cool.
Yeah. That was kind of neat, and it was kind of they knew something was wrong all along. They just never could put it together, because I would go to like my dad's funeral, and it was kind of fun because my cousins were betting that my brother was gay because he was, you know, muscular and slim and worked out all the time and all that and kept himself real neat. And so,
but do you consider yourself gay?
No.
Gay? Now you are heterosexual, aren't you?
I am actually maybe... I guess the term would be bisexual, metrosexual, trisexual. I like to word trisexual.
Try.
Because you'll try a lot.
Try a lot of things before. Because when I look at people and I look for a future partner or a partner right now, depending on what mood I'm in, I look for a person who's congruent. I look for a person. I don't look for a body or a person or a sex or a gender. I look for a person that's feels comfortable about themselves. If it look for somebody who is not going to get hung up on what may or may not be between my legs. I want this person who says, I'm confident, I want to have sex, and you seem pretty hot. Let's go.
Those are great, great ingredients. But now, during this same transition, 99 to 2012, this 13 years.
Yes.
You also did some really kind of dangerous stuff and started experimenting with hormones.
Yes, I did hormones on myself without a doctor. It wasn't until about 3 years ago that I actually came under doctor supervision for hormones. And a part of that was I had to choose who I wanted to be. And so, you know, it's nice having overseas pharmacies.
Yes, it is. But this hormone therapy in 99, this hormone therapy was much harder to come by.
It was harder. You had to go through hoops. There was a standard of care which was out there, which I fully supported as a person. I never could find a gateway. I never had the insurance. I never had the money to be able to afford to go through the formal transition process.
Whereas in the last couple of years, the process has become much easier and much more accessible, I believe.
It's very accessible now. In fact, now some insurances are picking it up, and there's probably a move afoot in the government for the government to start covering some of it. And it's helped a whole lot. Being able to find a counselor has helped a whole lot and stuff, though I've never been to counseling for transgender issues.
You have worked yourself through this like so many of your generation did.
I worked myself through it, and it was a lot of self-loathing and a lot of self-realization, and I couldn't have made it without friends. You know, friends kept believing in me, and that's what helped, is friends, kinky friends, you know, people who would say, you know, we accept you for who you are, and pushing and saying, hey, don't give up, don't give up.
Well, you've been a fixture in this community for many years now, and you've watched this community that we're in grow incredibly.
Exponentially. Several times over, it's grown.
Exponential several times. And you're right, this is a community of caring, supportive people.
It is very caring and supportive in many ways. And that's one of the beauties, I guess that's why so many people are attracted to the lifestyle a lot from my section, is because there is a initial acceptance. There is an initial, they're not going to slam the door in your face when you show up. So that at least gives somebody at least, because your choices are and were for a long time, you either came to the BDSM community or you went to the fetish bars where you were a piece of meat looking for fetishes.
Daphne.
Yes.
Incredible journey. What do you consider yourself today?
I'm still a seeker. I'm still an explorer. I'm a person that's still looking around the corner. Can I find a relationship? I don't know. Do I ever give up hope? Shoot, yeah. About every night I go home and beat myself up. But do I ever give up? No, I have not given up. So I'm looking for whatever may come. I don't know what the next great adventure is. I don't even know if I'm, I may go back and get another degree. Who knows? I'm always looking to expand myself and try to find the next experience. I think that will be trying to find a relationship.
Well, you know that today that our generation is finding love all the time. Now, what is My Time? Is that the the website?
I think it's called My Time.
My Time.
Yes.
So you think it may be your time?
I hope it will be one day. I'm not overly optimistic. I'm not overly pessimistic. All I know is when you put that big T on the end of your name, it drives a lot of people away.
Amber.
Yes.
Where did that name come from?
When I got into paganism, after I've experimented with a lot of religions, and I'm pretty well versed in a lot of religious areas. And paganism was pretty fun because, again, it was initial acceptance. It was, okay, you can be who you want to be and people are not going to run you out the door initially. But when it comes deep and down, there's always a harboring in our generation of fear of the transsexual type person.
Well, our version of pagan in Middle America is different than the coastal versions of paganism because we are very much rooted in our Christian heritage.
So I started looking for a name that would best describe myself as a person.
So after choosing Daphne.
Daphne's been my name.
Was kind of a sudden choice.
Yes. Right?
Amber was much more deliberate.
Amber was a heck of a lot more deliberate. It was a lot of study and a lot of search, and I went through many names. It was originally a magical name because even though I'll tell you a funny story about that in a second, but the main thing was Amber is not exactly a solid, not exactly a liquid. It's not anything.
It's not dead. It's not alive.
It's not dead. It's not alive. And the more imperfections in it or inclusions, the more valuable it is.
Right.
So that's how I came about it was the fact when I sat down and looked at my life, I was this. This was me. This is an amalgamation of lots of things. Not alive, not dead, not ancient, not old, not a fossil, not this. But every time, all the flaws in me made me who I was a valuable person. So when I had my legal name change, I actually chose, you know, kept my real name because Daphne was, no one else knew me by any other name.
You've been living with that name for many years.
And it still works. I like the name. It's very unique. And Amber became my take back of myself from other things. This is who I am when you really look at me.
That legal name change is such a powerful thing for so many people.
It's a second birthday.
You have a second birthday, but you're getting to choose this moment and how it happens.
Yes, it's my choice. And it's my statement that this is who I am from here on out.
Maybe we should just name kids by numbers until they're old enough to name themselves.
In the Native American culture, people have two names, their birth name, and when they go through their rites of passage to an adult, they get their forever name.
Forever name.
I did that with my pets.
With your pets. Okay.
Through all your journey, you have had ups and downs, pluses and minus into BDSM, into sexuality, identifying who you are, and becoming comfortable with yourself. What is your advice to somebody that thinks they're not who they were born?
My advice to them is to, if you don't have friends to work it out with, get with a good counselor. But the main thing is don't be afraid to open up the door to yourself. You have to open up that door and look inside that closet and pull out every bone in there that you don't think is there and look at it. You have to know who you are as a person. You cannot move forward unless you're there. I'm from an engineering background. You got to have a foundation to put a building up. If you don't know who you are inside, you can't build a person around it or else it'll continue to crumble. And that persona keeps crumbling. And when you find your persona's crumbling, you need to look at your foundation of who I am, where I'm at, and what am I as a person. You have to look in there, and you have to face yourself honestly. It is not easy admitting all the things in your life to yourself. But the healing that comes from that makes you a person that can weather being called names, weather family turning against you, whether friends disowning you. You can continue to go because you know who you are. You know where you want to go, basically. Life's a journey. It's not a destination. The only destination is death, and I'm not ready for it yet.
After in the years that I've known you, I value calling you a friend, and you are a very fine person.
Thank you.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you.
Daphne. It's been an incredible, incredible experience to be in the studio with you.
It's very humbling to be here and to be able to speak. Hopefully, you know, people will pick up from it and hopefully people will learn from it.
You have been listening to episode 37 of the Kinky Cast. Today we heard Daphne on dealing with her sexuality. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody and the Beast, I'm Max. Next week we bring you Dr. Grenchy, aka Grand Mistress Carla.